Hello, everyone. It's so good to be with you again.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to be here today.
This is a special. What we're doing is still adjusting our studio here. And that reminds me, I want to thank all of the people who are making this webinar and all the webinars possible. There's Gail, and there's Lori, and Joanne, and Kristen, and Jordan, and our webmaster, Tim. Without all of these people, Linda and I couldn't do this. We couldn't be speaking to you this way. So we're very grateful to all of you for supporting us this way. All of these supporters, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm Gary Zukav, and we have a special session for you today. It's a session on reverence, and reverence is so important in everything that we do. Well, you might say, why is it important to be reverent? By now, you know about karma. You know that what you say and what you do, and more specifically the intention behind what you say and what you do, creates consequences for you. And even though you know these things, you are learning in the Earth School, which means that if you do them unconsciously, if you lose track of what you're doing for a while and you react in anger, then you create the consequences of anger. That is, the people that you're angry with withdraw from you. They don't want to be intimate with you, they don't feel safe with you, they won't allow themselves to be vulnerable. But if you have no reverence and you react with anger, that could be a very different story.
It certainly could be, beloved. You know, I just want to say a couple of things before we actually get started on reverence. I just want to say that I'm really excited to be here with you too. I'm Linda Francis, and I'm excited to be talking about reverence with you again, beloved, and with all of you. And we've had such a rich time for the last month since we last saw you, since you last saw us on the video. And I'm just so excited to be with you and talk about reverence today. And we've had many, many examples and many opportunities to see reverence. And we'll share some of those with you today.
Indeed. Indeed. And the reason we're doing that is so that you will know what reverence is, and when you're experiencing it and when you're not, and also so that you'll know the importance of reverence. So just as I was saying, if you are angry and you're not a reverent person and you react in anger, you'll lash out at life. If you're angry enough, you might even destroy life. But a person who's reverent will not create the severe karmic consequences when they're acting in anger, for example, as a person who is. So that's why reverence is so important. Reverence is an experience of your soul. It's a perception of your soul. So as you develop reverence, you also take a step forward toward aligning your personality with your soul.
So can you go into that a little more, beloved? Because I want to make sure I understand. So if someone gets angry and they're reverent, do you mean that they have the intention to be reverent? Is that what you're saying? And so they won't create the consequences, the destructive consequences, because they have that kind of as their grounding, their anchor for not doing that, not really hurting someone?
If a person is angry and reacts in anger, they'll create negative consequences.
Yes.
But if a person is angry and reacts in anger and has no reverence, those negative consequences can be extremely destructive and painful when they return. That's why reverence, in other words, protects the person who's reverent from the severe and extremely painful karmic consequences of acting in fear. So, in other words, if a person, we're going to get into reverence and exactly what it is.
Okay.
But there's some things that I think we need to do first. To finish up this thought, there are people who are reverent, but who are not authentically empowered. In other words, there are people who would not harm anything. Often these are people who have been hurt or who have experienced pain so much in their own lives. But let's now go into showing people what reverence really is, and we have a special way to do that.
Yeah, and maybe we today. Can come back to that question again later.
Well, absolutely, we
yeah.
will. We're going to come back to reverence
Great.
And how to experience, how to know when you're experiencing it, what the dynamics of it are. But first, in concrete terms, what does reverence look like? So here we have a special example for you.
Mm. Well, my special example.
Mine too.
And mine, and Gary's also. We've just come from the memorial service of our friend Maya Angelou and Dr. Maya Angelou, and we wanted to share with you some of the ways we feel that she has always been reverent and why we have been so, why we were so drawn to her.
By the way, this wasn't actually a memorial service. It's just a common way of speaking of it, but everyone there knew, and it was shown. There was a On the brochure.
Oh, wait, I want to show that.
It's called,
beloved,
yes.
Since we're going to do that. Okay, so I hope you can see this.
There.
Can you see this? Well,
see? There.
There it is.
Now you can see that.
There.
And if you'll see, this is a celebration of rising joy with an exclamation mark. And this is the theme of Maya Angelou's ceremony.
And so, notice the symbol. I just want you to notice it. Because I want you to notice what I have on. I don't know if you can see it, but I'm going to come closer to the camera. See the symbol? It's the same symbol. And I want to say one amazing thing that happened is that this necklace came to me a few days after Maya's memorial service. We came from...
After her celebration,
after
my
her,
beloved.
Maya's
That's what we were saying.
Celebration. That's right. It was a celebration of rising joy. Absolutely. And I went to a Unity conference of all the Unity ministers with Gary, and Gary was speaking, and he was receiving the Light of God Award, Expressing in Society. That's their highest award that the Unity Church gives anyone. And so Gary received that this year. And while we were at the conference, we met this wonderful woman named Paulette, and I saw this necklace that I'm showing you on her. And I said, oh, that's the same symbol that we saw at the celebration of rising joy from Maya. I was so excited about that. And I wanted to say that the symbol, I didn't know what it meant, but I found out from her, it's from Ghana. And of course, Maya lived in Ghana for at least 4 years and was very, just very connected with Ghana. And this symbol means God is all, or love is all, or consciousness is all. That's what the symbol means. And I'm so, and this woman took it off of her neck and put it on me because I had this resonance with it and had seen the symbol. So now I have it. It's so special to me.
That's beautiful. And so as you can see this, I'm sure you saw it before, but if you can read the name, A Celebration of Rising Joy, you'll see joy is in quotation marks and has an exclamation mark after it. Sometimes when we receive books from Maya, she would inscribe them at the end. She would write joy with an exclamation mark.
Mm-hmm.
And rising is a part of one of her many, many famous poems, Still I Rise. So this was a celebration, a ceremony of Dr. Maya Angelou's life. At the end of it, her son said very clearly, there is no mourning here. This is a celebration. So we're going to tell you a little bit about what we've experienced with Maya Angelou over the 3 years that we knew her and the many trips that we took to be with her in her home. Because
And the many phone calls we had with her.
And the many phone calls. We spoke with her every Sunday. And we're doing this, we want to share this with you, not only because she's a remarkable person, we want to share her with you, but also because this call is about reverence.
Yes.
And Maya Angelou was, I feel, one of the most reverent people that I've met. This doesn't mean that she was mouthy. She was certainly not mouthy. She was powerful. She was big. She was over 6 feet tall. Her voice was big and booming. When she wanted it to boom, it boomed.
Indeed.
She was, at the same time, committed and loving, and committed to loving. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that she gave me a hug every time we saw her? No, on the contrary. I didn't experience her as a particularly affectionate person, but I experienced her as a deeply, continually, consistently loving person.
Mm.
She spent her life sharing with people, and many young people.
Mm.
She continually spoke to students at colleges. She created a school. She at least one that we know of in Washington, D.C., and it's named after her. There are so many things that are named after her. And why? Because she was so giving, because she was so active and proactive. She, around her, formed an extended family. Linda and I were in that family, and it was a remarkable, loving family. It doesn't mean that they held hands and that they wore white or they had crystals or that they were necessarily religious, although many of them are. Maya herself was a Southern Baptist, but that didn't keep her from loving anybody, anywhere, at any time.
Well, it also didn't help keep her from being able to totally understand spirituality at the deepest level. That's why she was so resonant with the seed of the soul.
Yes. If you've read the, if you have the 25th anniversary edition of the Seed of the Soul, you've noticed that one of the prefaces in the front is written by Dr. Maya Angelou. The other is written by Oprah Winfrey.
Mm-hmm.
And Maya says several remarkable things. She says, the 10th time I read the Seed of the Soul, I still found it outrageous.
Mm.
She said, when the author's ideas stop challenging you, you'll laugh with the laughter of a discoverer who's discovered a new continent. Now, this is a Southern Baptist talking about the Seed of the Soul. I'm so touched. And that's one of the things that made Maya completely remarkable. She was religious, she was loving, she was open, she was always exploring.
Mm.
One of the last things she did was she was taking a Unity Church online course. Mm. I don't want to be a minister, she said, I just want to know more.
Mm.
And that's how she was in life. She told us things that are so powerful. And now that I'm thinking about them, I realize how powerful they are. She would tell us things like, when you get, give.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. She would tell us, when you learn, teach.
I think that's so important, when you learn, teach.
That's right.
Because once you know something that's important to you, if you don't share it with others, then it remains really stagnant in you. In fact, it will create things in you that you don't want. What is that famous saying, beloved?
Oh, yes.
Love it.
That is a saying from the Gnostic, according the Gospel, according to Thomas, which is a Gnostic Gospel. You won't find it in the Bible in your hotel bedside drawer.
Mm.
Because the Gnostics were persecuted by Christians, by the church, in the 2nd century A.D. And by persecuted, I don't mean that they were scolded. I mean that they were killed. And so as they ran for their lives, they hid their own gospels in an earthen jar in a cave in the desert. And in 1942, that cave and that jar were discovered. And in it were these gospels. And like the gospels in the Bible, these gospels purport to say what Jesus said. And according to Thomas, Jesus said, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you.
Mm.
If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. So for those of you who have been learning about authentic power, experimenting with it, maybe you're in a study group based on the study guide in the back of the Seat of the Soul, in addition to the life school that you're in, but you're not telling anybody about authentic power. You're keeping it sort of as your personal secret. You're a closet seeker because you think they're going to think I'm weird. They're going to think I'm strange to say that our evolution now requires our spiritual growth. It requires my spiritual growth. And my spiritual growth requires things such as emotional awareness, my emotional awareness. It requires me making responsible choices. That means making choices that will create consequences for which I am willing to assume responsibility. It means that a great transformation in consciousness is underway because there are millions of people who are beginning to sense themselves as more than a mind and more than a body. And I am one of them. So if you are not sharing these things, then you are not teaching what you learn. And I'm not talking about teaching anything, something that you learn just because it's sounds good.
Well,
or teaching, pardon me.
Or also, excuse me, you need something, beloved?
Yeah, I want to, here it is. There. I hope that I've eliminated a little noise I was hearing in my headphone. It means whenever you learn something that registers with you, that makes an impact for you, that helps you to recognize that you've just heard something or learned something that is valuable to you, and then you experiment with it, and then you find that it is valuable to you, and then you don't share it, that's what Thomas says the Christ was talking about.
But I also want to say one thing. It always depends on your intention for sharing. If you're sharing because you feel like you want to cram something down someone's throat, that you feel that they have to know it, that it's your way is the best way, then that's not what we're talking about.
Or impress them with your wisdom.
Yeah, we're not talking about sharing from fear. We're just talking about sharing because you really want to share and have no attachment to what someone says. And we've been in several different circumstances over the last month that I had these wonderful opportunities to share with people, and I saw how amazingly open they were, even though I didn't necessarily, they weren't a group of people that I would think of as spiritual in any way. That was Gary's 50th Harvard reunion. We met so many people that were so open and actually had been following Gary, and we had no idea. You know, had come to some of our events and had read the books and had watched him on Oprah. So many people said that to you, beloved. It was really amazing. And even others were so open to looking at their life in a different way. And so that was just one experience that I can think of.
Indeed. And so if you're having any experiences like that, and you are because you're in the life school, and because you've read The Seat of the Soul, or because you've read Spiritual Partnership,
mm-hmm.
or The Heart of the Soul, and you are developing your own emotional awareness,
mm-hmm.
then what you learn, teach. Share it.
Mm-hmm.
Share it. If you're being modest about who you are and what you can do, look at that too. Maya had a real, if there's one thing that I think she had a real dislike of, it was false modesty. She did not like it at all. She said, if you've got it, give it. If you went to Harvard, tell people you went to Harvard. That's what the universe has done for you. She had her own way of saying it. She said, you've been paid for. So what are you keeping it back for?
Mm.
What are you keeping yourself back for?
Mm.
Now, what could allow her to say something audacious like that? Love. Love of the people she was speaking to. As her extended family grew, it developed into gatherings on her birthdays and on Thanksgivings. And then the gatherings got so large they had to get a small auditorium for them. And once Linda and I were with Maya when she got a call or was told about someone, a young woman, who said, I've always wanted to come to one of your Thanksgiving gatherings, would that be all right? And Maya said, your interest is your invitation.
Mm.
That's reverence.
Mm.
That's looking at every person as in and of himself or herself of value. Maya also said, when you know better, you do better. There's a great deal of responsibility given to you in that, and a great deal of compassion shown to you.
Hmm.
What you did in the past, you did because you didn't know better, because you didn't know about creating authentic power. You didn't know the extent of your own creative capacity. You didn't know that you're not invisible, that what you do impacts the world and is important to the world and is important to others and creates consequences for you that you experience intimately and inescapably. You didn't know those things, so you acted unconsciously.
Mm.
Maybe it was feeling superior and entitled, or feeling inferior and needing to please, or lashing out in anger, or withdrawing emotionally in jealousy or in rage, or needing to get even, vengefulness. But now that you know, now that you know that those are opportunities for you to grow spiritually, each of those experiences of fright and parts of your personality, now that you know that only you can decide that you will not act on them, that you will act instead when you experience them from a loving part of your personality, such as one that's appreciative or grateful or patient or caring or content or in awe.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you know that, you can do better. Now you have the responsibility to do better.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibility to whom? Number one, you. Because you are living, until you become aware of this and change it in yourself, whatever this is for you, anger, sexual addiction, overeating, workaholism, judgmental thoughts, until you change it, you will live in the hell of those experiences. And you will not be able to give the gifts that you were born to give. So as you create authentic power yourself, you also contribute differently to the collectives in which you participate, your family, your school, your neighborhood, your city, your friend, your groups of friends, your state, your nation, and the world. All of this begins with you and your choices. And now that you know that, you can do better.
So,
if you don't do better, have compassion with yourself.
So how does, what is, can let's bring that back around to reverence.
Yes.
I'd like to do that. Because, and you'll see in the Soul Connections that's coming out next week, I believe, that we'll be talking more about the celebration with Maya. But we just wanted to say some things to you because she's so in our heart, and I feel her all the time. So I don't feel she's gone anywhere. She's not in her physical body anymore, but I feel her, and I'm grateful for her life and grateful for our knowing her.
Yes. Now, how does what Linda just said tie into reverence?
Mm-hmm.
Reverence is perceiving beyond the shell of appearance and into the essence. It is contact with the essence of a thing or a person or a bird or a plant or an animal. Reverence is essence to essence contact. It is an essence to essence experience. So what does that mean, the shell of form or the exterior appearance? Suppose that you had a friend and you love this friend, and one day this friend showed up at a dinner party dressed in a purple suit, if it's a guy, or dressed in a polka dot dress, something that struck your friend as something that he or she would like to wear, and you yourself don't like that particular choice of suit or dress.
Mm.
Would you stop loving your friend because she showed up that way, or he showed up that way? Of course not. Because what your friend is wearing does not have to do with who your friend is, with his joys and challenges and pains and aspirations. It's just a suit of clothing. As you become multisensory, you begin to experience yourself as a soul in addition to a mind and a personality. And you begin to look at your personality, all of who you are from your birth to your death, as an appearance that clothes an essence. And that essence is the energy of your soul. In other words, your personality and all of its attributes are earth suits, just as your friend was wearing a suit. It's a suit that your soul adapts and adopts, and that it utilizes for a period of time. Time is something that only we experience in the domain of the five senses, in the domain of time and space and matter and duality. It's not an experience of your soul, but your soul uses your personality and to grow in the areas that it desires to grow, that it has made the choice to grow. You may experience that as your anger and your need to challenge it, or your jealousy, or your inability to stop watching pornography or searching for sex or shopping or gambling or smoking or drinking. But whatever it is, your personality provides you the opportunities to make choices that will assist in the maturation of your personality while you're in the Earth School and the evolution of your soul. When you are a reverent person, you see that. You see that every person has an essence, and just as you do, and you begin to experience that essence. I saw that in Maya. She didn't get caught up in the earth suit that someone was wearing. She did have clearly defined reactions to the behaviors of some people who act unconsciously. She wouldn't allow that behavior in her house. She would ask them to leave, and in unambiguous terms, she would say, "Is this your coat? Is that your driver outside? It's time for you to go." That's how clear and direct she was. Yet she was reverent. She would not harm. She would not harm anyone or anything.
She was reverent, and she was in her integrity.
Always.
And you have to be in your integrity when you're reverent.
So how did she do that? One of the things she told us was, and she told everyone this, people will forget what you say, and they'll forget what you do, but they will never forget how you made them feel.
You know what I think, Beloved, about that? I'm
yes.
just thinking, what happens when I share or you share or any of you share from your heart? What happens is that people get to sense your being. Get to sense who you are when you're sharing from your heart. And I just think that for me, that's my constant intention, to share from my heart, to be in my heart, to share what my soul wants me to share all the time.
Exactly.
That's what I want. And that, of course, is creating authentic power. And anything that's not that, any thoughts that come, any feelings that come, that don't have to do with love, that don't have to do with reverence, those are the ones that I challenge. Those are the ones that I want to make sure that I don't let those get in the way of my connection with another person, whether it be Gary or one of you or someone I see on the street. It doesn't matter.
So let's get specific. How do you know when you're experiencing reverence and when you're not?
Mm.
When you're judging someone else, you've absented yourself from reverence. When you feel that you're superior or inferior to anyone, you've absented yourself from reverence.
So that would be a judgment, wouldn't it? It would be, if I feel someone is better than me, or smarter than me, or whatever, that then I'm feeling inferior to that person.
And you've absented yourself from reverence.
And from being able, yes, from being able to see that person as a soul, from being able to really be with that person.
Yes, and that's why you've absented yourself from reverence.
Yes.
When you seek to gain at another person's expense, you absent yourself from reverence.
Mm.
Think about that in our world today.
Mm.
When you seek to profit at another person's loss, you absent yourself from reverence.
I'd say anytime you're not in the present moment, anytime you're controlled by fear of any kind, you're not able to be reverent. You're not able to choose that intention of the soul, reverence for life.
Yes, let's be careful when we talk about presence, though. It's possible to be present and to act in ways that would create painful karma.
Can you give an example?
Yes, you can be aware of your anger, aware when you lash out in it, and still create painful consequences because you're not acting in love. You're acting on the intention of fear, which you're experiencing as anger.
So you can be aware that you're angry and still act on it.
Yes.
So that's what you're saying. If you're that, if you're doing that,
that's not reverent, and it's not creating authentic power.
Right. It's not using your will to create with love, even while you're feeling those things.
Exactly.
Okay.
In self-transformation, there are two required things. These are the bare bones of self-transformation. Are this: number one, if you want to change something about yourself, you need to be aware of it first. If you're not aware of it, then you can't change it.
Right.
Secondly, once you're aware of it, you need to have the intention to change it. So awareness, emotional awareness specifically, and will, volition, your own free will. These are the two things that are needed for self-transformation. And that also is the bare-bone structure of creating authentic power. That's why we can say, and we do say, that creating authentic power is not something that precludes any belief system. You can do it as a Christian. And in fact, you do it as a Christian when you have the impulse to lash out at someone or to judge someone, and you think of a psalm or a hymn that will bring you out of that and into a more loving part of your personality. You can do it as a Buddhist by remembering a sutra like the Heart Sutra or the Paramajra Sutra. Pardon me, it's been a while. You can do it as a Muslim by remembering something in the Quran. You can do it as an atheist by walking by a stream. There are countless ways of challenging a frightened part of your personality. All of them work as long as your intention is to consciously challenge that part of your personality, not to distract you, not to feed it, but to look inside yourself and realize that this is a part of my personality that has controlled me, and I will not allow it to control me in the future. I will not participate further in the creation of a world of brutality and callousness and judgment. I will not contribute to a world of discord and hoarding and competition and exploitation. I will instead, in this moment, at this time, in this power struggle, in this moment of reactivity, stop doing that. I will instead contribute to a world of harmony and cooperation and sharing and reverence for life. That is the creation of authentic power. That is the application of awareness and volition. And without that, you cannot give the gifts that you were born to give. And as you do that, you automatically become reverent. Your multisensory perception will help you see that there is an essence in you and an essence in others. Mm. But honoring that essence is reverence.
Mm. In fact, that's something that we would really like you to focus on. We'll talk more about that, but focus on looking at the essence of everyone and everything around you. So that'll be an assignment that you can take on for the next month, because it's so important that you really look at yourself and others as for who you are, the soul that you are, the soul that you are, beloved, the soul that all of you are. I mean, that's how we... And when we connect that way, then what we, all we can do is create authentic power. Because if I'm feeling reverent and I have a frightened part that comes up in me, it's more likely, if I'm holding that intention, that I'm going to see that, oh, look at you. Look at you, frightened part that wants to blame someone or wants to judge someone or feels overwhelmed right now and forgets who you are. Then I can see that and challenge that and come back to what I really want to do, which is be connected and be loving with everyone.
Connected, connected, connected. That is key. Mm-hmm. That is reverence. If you're not, if you're only connected to what you want from someone, that's not reverence, and that's the pursuit of external power. But if you're really connected, then you're present, then you're experiencing a soul-to-soul interaction, then you are creating authentic power. Mm-hmm. You are living in and cultivating the loving parts of your personality. So, pardon me.
I was just saying, for the next month, you can notice if there are certain people that you're much more interested in than other people, and see if that may be a frightened part that wants something from that person, that thinks that person is important and other people are not important. Notice those thoughts, those judgmental thoughts, the ways that those frightened parts want to be in the world, and you can notice it and even challenge it, and then connect with that person so you don't feel any distance. It's a really wonderful practice.
It is
like
a wonderful practice.
Yeah.
It is the practice. The practice of creating authentic power. Allow yourself to be reverent and allow yourself to know when you're not, so that you can challenge the frightened part of your personality that is not and that is controlling you in the moment.
I just want to give an example from me.
All right.
As it happened, I noticed yesterday I was at an event and I noticed some thoughts that I had about myself and thoughts that I had about someone else. And I realized both of those, of course, came from frightened parts of my personality, and all I had to do was challenge them. Because in that moment, it kept me separate from people. Actually, I did challenge the one thought that I had about not wondering why I didn't get invited before now. A few things like that came into my mind.
Does that sound like a thought that originates in fear?
Absolutely.
Why
and
did
I also,
they invite me?
And I also thought, yeah.
Now, if you say that, you've just put your power and your value in the hands of someone else, often someone you don't know. But it doesn't matter even if you know them and love them. When you put your value in the hands of someone else, when you depend upon what someone else says or thinks about you for your own sense of value, then you will automatically pursue external power. You'll try to change that person so that a frightened part of your personality will feel better and safe.
Or you'll push them away in judgment.
Indeed. Now, we're about to leave the video portion of this session now. Continue to look for ways in which you might not be experiencing reverence. For example, here's another example. Do you get overwhelmed sometime and therefore disconnected from the people around you? Do you get attached to your to-do list so much so that when someone loves you and comes in, you're irritable and you don't want them to be bothering you?
Mm-hmm.
That is when you do that, you detach yourself from reverence. So it's easy to see these things.
Set the intention
to see them.
Anytime you're in fear, you cannot experience reverence. Anytime. So if you're in fear and you're not challenging it, if you're in fear, you're aware of it and you're challenging it, then you can connect right back to reverence, being reverent, and sharing the best that you can, and being the best that you can.
That's right. You do the best that you can. Mm-hmm. But first, you develop your awareness, your emotional awareness. Then you begin to practice responsible choice. Then you do the best that you can. And by that time, you're doing a lot to change yourself
Indeed.
And to contribute differently to the world.
Indeed.